Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. With the front lines collapsing, domestic political instability, and claims of massive corruption at the highest level, the Kyiv regime is on shaky ground. Its survival is in question. Add to this the struggle to make peace or continue the war. Can Zelensky survive all this? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Tariq Suril Amar in Istanbul. He's a historian and political commentator. And in Plymouth, we cross to Patrick Henningsen. He is the editor and founder of 21st Century Wire. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick this off with Patrick in Plymouth. I don't know really where to begin here. Do we look at domestic issues going on in Ukraine? We look at the bickering of the Europeans, the indecision of the Trump administration, and how they want to proceed with the week coming ahead with Witkoff going and possibly Jared Kushner coming to Moscow. What is in play most important to you? Because this anti-corruption drive, all of a sudden, of course, we all knew it was very corrupt from the very, very beginning. I would even claim that the origins of this caper is corruption. But it seems like a lot of things are coming together. How is it going to unfold, or is that unknown still, Patrick?
I really, it's hard to read the situation, first of all, because of Trump. Trump administration has this history of flip-flopping. And what we've seen on every single negotiations, whether it be vis-a-vis Ukraine or the Iranian negotiations or with Gaza, you see just constant U-turns and flip-flopping, because what happens is, while he makes the big public relations splash, he makes and controls the media at the beginning, and he gets his photo ops, he gets his declarations, he puts the tweets out, oh, we've done it, we're going to bring peace. And then soon, very soon after, the whole thing begins to topple. This pattern has repeated itself right across the board with every single geopolitical flashpoint. And my conclusion is that this administration does not have the framework, the personnel, the capability, nor the intelligence from an international relations or diplomatic point of view in order to bring the ball over the goal line. That's my conclusion on this, that they'd just be doomed to fail because this is so complex. This is not a real estate property deal. It's not a land deal. But that's how these guys' brains are wired, because they're all neophytes, diplomatically speaking. And they're sort of illiterate from an international relations point of view. And all this transactional diplomacy is just, personally, it's garbage. You know, this is just media fodder that creates the mythology around Trump. And really, you can't, you know, this president, it's the narcissism of Trump to come in and to throw out, you know, hundreds of years of statecraft, diplomatic history, science of warfare and politics, Clausewitz et al., and think that he, in his infinite godliness, can just wipe all that away with his real estate buddies from the tri-state area and his son-in-law in tow, and can somehow like complete some kind of complex negotiations to bring one of the biggest official proxy war of the modern era. This is the test case for a proxy war in history. It's never happened before. And so the Europeans and the Ukrainians will always be there to basically undermine it. But what we have now is a kind of a fait accompli. Personally, Peter, I think it's because the Biden administration, the Democrats, had such great micromanagement control over NABU. NABU was a corruption surveillance agency. That's why it was founded, to protect certain corruption and to nail other people. You know, so
or to allow people to enrich themselves as well.
Yes, and it's gone out of control now because the Trump administration they don't have the people and the embedded operatives in there, or the control over the agency, and it's the whole system that the Democrats, that Biden had masterminded there, has come unglued, basically. And now you're starting to see the results of it, plus the attrition of the conflict. It's putting extra political pressure on Zelensky, and the Europeans are still calling for war. You know, and Zelensky's fighting for his life, and Trump doesn't know how to complete this process because they don't want to recognize the truth. It's political suicide to address the root causes in the West.
You know, Tariq, I absolutely agree with everything that Patrick said, but there's one word he didn't mention in all of this: Russia. which is really interesting because over the last 10 days or so, we've had all of this commentary about plan versus plan, adding points, deleting points, who's in, who's out, who's dismissed, who's going to lose their job. All of this in this echo chamber that is bouncing around in hyper speed. And the Russians just got a plan that we don't know about yet. We don't know how many points there is. We know that there's a plan for Witkoff to support it. But it's very interesting to me, this whole debate is an intra-Western debate. The Russians are not even involved in it yet. Tariq.
You know, I actually understand why Patrick wasn't mentioning Russia. And I think the reason is, if I may speak for him or guess for him, is that Russia is in a very good sense, in a very good way, very predictable and very rational, right? We sort of know what Russia wants and what it is very likely to do because they've been telling us like for years, actually, and they're very consistent about it. So another way of looking at it, you could say we have four really important big players here. We have Russia, we have the Europeans, we have Ukraine, important in its own way, although it's the proxy, and we have the US, right? Ukraine is predictably, under Zelensky at least, against peace. The Europeans are predictably against peace. The Russians are predictably for peace, largely on their terms, which makes sense because they've won the war that we, the West, have imposed on them. The one really unpredictable factor is literally the Trump administration, that is the USA, which I think Patrick was unpacking for us, right? I would maybe add one thing where I'm a little bit less harsh on Trump than he would be. And that's, I think, Patrick, you're absolutely right that Trump has this way of the amateur, right, and his whole team of saying, all these experts have done for hundreds of years diplomacy. We don't need it. We are businessmen. We know how to do this, right? But give him one thing. Diplomacy as a tradition was ruined before him. It was ruined before him. And what he came into was the Biden world. And the Biden world didn't have any functioning diplomacy anymore. They had already taken that apart, right? And you can go back to Obama as well, actually, and beyond that. So in a way, what is coming together is the Trumpian amateur arrogance, right? The resentment of the old experts. But also with the fact that the old experts destroyed themselves and destroyed their own credibility, right? So how is this going to play out? Look, one thing, I would add one thing. We don't exactly know what's going to happen in Ukraine. There is a possibility of a collapse of the regime. And if the regime collapses from inside, then of course the cards get stacked in a different way again, right? But if the Zelensky regime stays in power, or if a regime stays in power that does essentially Zelensky policies, maybe with Zaluzhny at the top, right? Then we know that Ukraine will continue sabotaging a peace until the conditions are much worse again.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good for peace at this time, except we're going to be surprised, which I never rule out.
Yeah, but I don't see any disagreement on this program, but given that the approach that Trump and his people have taken, they're setting themselves up for failure. And this will be depending on your metric, okay? We had Anchorage, then we have the potential of Budapest, and now we have this, okay? Three strikes and you're out. Because what's not explained to Western audiences is that Russia can say no to this, okay? That's not telegraphed very well, okay? Because the perception is that they want an off, they always say they give the Russians an off-ramp. No, the Russians can give the West an off-ramp, maybe, if it chooses to. And I think you all be in agreement with me. Why should they agree, Patrick?
I think the Russians have clearly figured out Donald Trump and this U.S. government, this administration. They priced in all the erraticism, all the inconsistencies, the incoherence. They've already priced this in. They priced in his appetite for, you know, public approval, media, et cetera. The Europeans also are pandering to Trump as well. So everybody's pandering to this U.S. administration to tell them what they want to hear. And meanwhile, Russia will just grind on But while they grind on, the Zelensky regime will be ground down. And that is also a political timeline that is inescapable. And I will say, you know, zooming out, a series of events unfolded with the beginning of the Maidan coup that are irreversible. And Russia understands the broader scope of this and what it means in terms of Ukraine as a failed state after 8 years of civil war. This happens. When you have a civil war, it eventually ends up breaking up the state. This has happened so many times in history, but we're all meant to think, oh, no, borders can't be changed by force, et cetera. And I'm like, Kosovo, you know, of course they can't.
Well, you know, Patrick, I mean, you know, borders shouldn't be changed by force. I mean, Ukraine is an example in the 20th century of how a country's borders can change and change very rapidly. And it you almost always are in the case of Ukraine exclusively. Done by outside powers.
But Peter, which is, you know, the one thing, the saving grace of all this is that there's still this understanding between Soviet Union and now the Russian Federation and the United States that they a non-confrontational underlying assumption. They will not be into a direct confrontation. And that's still there.
I don't know about that. Let me go to Tariq about that, because I think that is the cardinal mistake that the Biden administration is that, you know, you go toe to toe, great power to great power. The 20th century taught everyone that's not a good idea because great powers can disappear. Tariq.
I largely agree with Patrick on this. I think the one thing that the Trump 2.0 has given us is that Washington is farther away from being willing for a direct confrontation with Russia than under Biden, much farther away, I would say. However, I think there's one caveat, which is that, as before pointed out, they're not very consistent, so they're not very reliable anywhere. And the other thing is that Washington maintains its linkage to the Europeans. And the Europeans right now are extremely dangerous. And they might be capable of somehow getting us all into a larger war. However, I totally agree with Patrick that it was much worse under Biden. This is something that's still in place, just about, and I hope it won't change. The one thing I would say about Russia, if I may, is that I am speculating, obviously, but my speculation would be that since Russian politicians think ahead, unlike politicians in the West, they are already thinking a lot about the time after the war and after the victory. And one question I think they're asking themselves is what sort of Ukraine, if it remains stable on the other side of the border, more or less, are we going to face? And it could be a highly revanchist Ukraine, right? Constantly mobilizing to get back at Russia, or it could be Ukraine that actually undergoes a learning process and understands that this was horrible that ended and turns against the West.
You brought up a very good point, and we'll discuss it in the second half of the program. In the meantime, I'm going to jump in here, gentlemen. We're going to go to a quick break, and after that quick break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. You were on a roll, Tariq. I want you to continue your thought here. You were talking about what kind of Ukraine will be on Russia's border and on Europe's border when this is all said and done.
Yes. So basically, I think they may be thinking in Moscow about a future after the war in which Ukraine will remain revanchist, always looking for opportunities to restart the war against Russia, or in which it will flip the other way, in which it will undergo a big social learning process and learn that it was taken into this horrible dead end and used up by the West and its own corrupt elite, in which case the relationship to Russia can be reshaped in ways that we cannot yet easily imagine. But I'm sure they're thinking about it in Moscow. Why am I saying this? Because that may be an argument for Russia not to give a peace too easily, because they have a vested interest in the Ukrainian regime that is in place now to fully ruin itself at home so that Ukrainians can finally learn what has happened to them.
Well, Patrick, I mean, going back to this issue of corruption, now, my theory of the case is that the U.S. authorities, particularly in the intelligence community, know very well what's been going on with the money in Ukraine. And that's why I interjected, you know, not only did they know where it went, there were some that were favored to get, because this was the payoff. This is, you know, you sign up, I'm attacked all the time on X. You know, I always say, remember, the Ukrainian elite volunteered for this job. They volunteered for it. And that's one of the reasons why it continues, because it's a grift. As long as you can cash that check, let's keep it going, okay? Because these people will not be, they won't be held responsible. They'll go into exile, go to Israel, go to the, I don't know if they'll be able to go to the U.S. They might be under investigation. But that's as far as they think. And as it's been pointed out here, these anti-corruption agencies, not only are they Western, they're Democrat Party in the United States driven, okay? What's going on here, Patrick? I mean, are they nudging things, hoping it will fall in the right place where they want it to be, or they want a new leader in Ukraine to continue the same? And Zelensky has been already mentioned here. What's the calculus here? Because it could help Trump or it could hurt Trump.
I think there's just a deterioration of the Ukrainian political consensus. And there's pressure coming from all different points. I mean, we're not even addressing the reality, and believe it or not, this is a reality, that there are anti-Zelensky resistance factions on the Western Ukraine side, anti-government, that's funny enough, are somewhat allied with the Russian efforts as well, the Russian side of the argument, because they just want to see this government out. They want to see the war over. This is just inevitable that this is going to fester over time, the longer this unpopular war drags, and it's increasingly unpopular. So we have to acknowledge the realities inside what's left of Ukraine politically. It's a disaster. Nobody knows this more than the Ukrainians, even though they can't publicly speak up and say it for fear of being beaten by the Nazi Praetorian Guard that surrounds this government. So there's that side of the conversation that we're not seeing as well. But the enablers here ultimately are these European countries. The U.S. no doubt instigated this series of events from the beginning. They've funded it, they've armed it, they've supported it, but they've got such buy-in, and the Europeans have basically taken this crazy, crazy project and run with it, and they don't know what to do because they've wrapped their whole political identity. They've sunk all of their political capital and their physical financial capital into this effort that really defines NATO. It redefines NATO. They're trying to rebrand NATO and also the EU itself, so that both the destiny of the EU and NATO are tied to the narrative on this story. And Zelensky is the central protagonist of this political theater that the Europeans have just basically lopped all this praise and garlands all over this little clown who is basically a construct, who was installed into power on the back of a 7-year public relations and TV media campaign to portray him as the new president, and to that created the groundwork for his landslide victory when he ran for president and he assumed office in 2019. So this was all planned. And don't think that the Western intelligence agencies were not somewhere behind the orchestration of that. And many foreign intelligence agencies, in fact, this was planned, and now it's falling apart. It's an unmitigated disaster. And Russia is merely, I think, reconstituting, and in the words of Putin, and again, people will write off that long diatribe with Tucker Carlson, but he was laying out the bigger story here. Those are all Russian people, all right the way through Odessa, right up to Kharkiv. Those are Russians. That was nominally Russia. That was Novorossiya. Crimea was Russia. And whatever happened politically during the Soviet times, now you can see those fissures are coming apart. In the West, we're going to drive a wedge in those fissures, and we're going to use it to overextend Russia, to weaken Russia, and to achieve regime change in Russia. This is our big opportunity. These opportunities don't come like the fall of the Iron Curtain. We're going to wreck this, you know, Russian Federation economically and socially and politically, and
this
they
is
failed.
This is exactly what Victoria Nuland wanted. Okay, this to get Russians and Ukrainians to fight. I mean, that's a remarkable political operator. I'll give her that. But Teddy, to continue on with what Patrick was saying about Europe, they can't let this go because there will be a reckoning of a magnitude I think would be hard to comprehend. All of the buy-ins to this project, this Ukraine project, it's bankrupting the EU. You know, the EU sends a rebuke to the Zelensky regime about corruption. Meanwhile, everyone, the Europeans want to steal Russian assets in Belgium. I mean, how hypocritical. I mean, even a child could see the hypocrisy in all of that. Tariq.
It's not only hypocritical, which is what the EU does all the time. It's completely self-defeating. Everybody who's not completely dumb can predict that if they actually were to confiscate or de facto confiscate these Russian assets to the tune of 140 billion euro or so right now, they would massively damage the euro as a currency and their credibility in general as a place where you can park money. So this is a horrible idea, but they only generate horrible ideas nowadays. And again, why are they doing it? I largely agree with Patrick. I would just maybe go into more detail. I think there are several ways you can see why the Europeans can't or think they can't let go. One is proximity. Unlike the United States, they are close. And they should have considered this fact when they got into this, instead of joining the United States. And they could have done this if they had stuck together several big European players, say France, Germany, Britain. They could have done it. They could have said to the United States, you want to run a proxy war through Ukraine against Russia? Count us out. It might have prevented the whole thing. Bonus point, right? But they didn't. They got into it. And now they're being stranded and they're much closer to Russia. Now, I'm not saying that Russia wants to invade them, but some of them are clearly paranoid, right? So it impresses them. The other thing is, look at the way sanctions have worked. Sanctions have not really damaged Russia. They have cost Russia, but not damaged it. There's a difference.
Oh, they're annoying.
They have not damaged and hardly cost anything the U.S., very important. And the one place they have really damaged is actually the European Union, right? So they have sunk their economies, as has been pointed out. This means they're not just facing Russia. What's much more important is in a post-war world, they will face their own populations. And we already have a very successful new right. And although the new right is maneuvering, you know, with how they relate to Russia and Bella in France is a little less outspoken and there's a little split in the AfD in Germany. Still, the basic fact is that the new right parties in Europe, which are very successful in challenging really the system, offer people a more the hope of a more rational relationship, especially economically, again, to Russia, which may take them over the line in Germany and in France, at least, maybe even in the UK.
There are limits to that. It's called the Romanian precedent, okay?
Yes.
Patrick.
But one thing, Peter.
All right, go ahead.
If it's too much, you can't do the Romania anymore. You can do a Romania to Romania, but can you do a Romania to Germany and France at the same time?
Well, we'll see. I mean, yeah. These people are really ambitious in their vainglorious plans to, represent the highest level of the human condition. I mean, these people—it's just really delusional here. Patrick, we're rapidly running out of time. Give us your preview. What's going to happen in the week that's unfolding?
I don't know. I'm
being really honest. I don't know either. So I appreciate your honesty.
My guess is that just the way things are going to collapse is going to default to status quo right up through Christmas and into the new year. And Trump can blame other people for maybe this failing, blame the press for leaking or whoever leaked the various things. And then the status quo is going to benefit. It's going to benefit the European position, the defense contractor position. It's bad for Europe, but it's good for America and it's good for Russia. So you have Russia on the extremes and America pressing in, benefiting from this. And Ukraine, of course, is going to be a loser. Europe's going to be a loser ultimately. We can wait for these governments to cycle out. But, you know, are the deep states and these governments going to overcome the new right? That's like they have Trump. Trump is now, the, you know, becoming a neocon administration, as we can see. So I don't know. I think, you know, ultimately, this is a pattern geopolitically that's played out through history, and the bigger powers will ultimately benefit. And it just shows how weak and disparate and fragmented and hopeless the European Union project and NATO, its adjunct, has become.
Well, I'm unfortunately, we have to end on a very pessimistic note, and it will come for me. There's always the possibility, gentlemen, of escalation. And that's what we have to always be worried about. When you're backed up into a corner and you know, ratioing yourself, you can and you will and most likely will lash out. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Istanbul and in Plymouth. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.